Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. So with this episode, we finish our five-episode series of Small Towns in Louisiana. We continue to partner with the Louisiana Municipal Association to share these small towns, and we're so appreciative of Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series. I mentioned in the first episode of this series, and you've probably heard references throughout my interviews, about the winter storms that were affecting all of Louisiana when I took my road trip back in February of this year. Well, as a result of the severe winter weather conditions, I couldn't even make it to my final small town, which is located in the northwest corner of the state. While I've caught up with small town officials by Zoom before, I couldn't stand the thought of sharing a new small town with you all without going there to visit myself first. So I had to make a second trip from my small town of Ocilla, Georgia, to Louisiana to visit this fifth small town in Louisiana in mid-April. I was excited that John Gallagher, LMA's executive director, was able to meet me there. Well, John, good to see you again.
Yes.
And thanks for coming out to see me here in Grand Cane. Wasn't able to make it to Grand Cane when I was here before because of snow and ice and road closures and everything. Northwest Louisiana kind of got, Western Louisiana during those storms when I was here before in February hit pretty hard. So it
did. Yeah. That was very surprising. We don't get that kind of weather very often up here in this neck of the woods. So really appreciate you making the effort to take that drive back from Ocilla. So, so it's good to have you in Grand Cane and Great DeSoto Parish.
Well, I picked this date because I'm staying for the first of their village festivals they have. So I'm looking forward to that, looking forward to talking with the mayor. Just figured I'd take the opportunity to catch up with you in the 2 months since I started this journey. A couple things have happened, and some cities, towns, and villages in Louisiana, the cities of Georgia and all over the place, and the counties and parishes, I should say, too. We just got a huge influx of relief from a congressional act you were going to kind of go into a little bit of detail about.
We did with the ARPA, American Rescue Act, that Congress passed in, I think it was about mid-March, was something that we worked tremendously hard on, along with the National League of Cities, and I know the Georgia Municipal League, and was very, very actively involved in that. And I have to start off to give credit to the National League of Cities and Clarence Anthony, their director, and Irma Diggs, their federal advocacy director, and her staff just did an amazing job. The key to it was direct funding to our local governments, to our municipalities and parishes. And with the CARES Act, we got a good influx of funds to be able to use previously budgeted expenses. However, it was not direct. And so our legislature was able to take, I think we had about 800 set aside for local governments, and they redirected about $300 million too. And it was a great program, to a small business program to help the small businesses. But we still had about $400 million in outstanding applications that were approved for funding for COVID-related expenses. So we're really, really excited about getting, the state, I believe, is getting about $5 billion, and locals are getting a little over $1 billion to split between the cities and parishes. And again, the biggest aspect of that is direct funding. Our entitlement cities, those above 50,000, are getting it directly from the state, from the U.S. Department of Treasury. Our non-entitlement communities, which are under 50,000, will be going from Treasury to the state and then to the localities. And the good thing is it can't be diverted. And one thing that I'm advocating and our association's advocating, and along with National League of Cities and other leagues, when you get this funds, and some of these are going to see small towns that an incredible amount of money. And I think some of them, they may see what they're getting, but because of the guidelines through the Treasury, they can only get about 75% of what their previous budget was in, I believe, January of 2020. So it might be reduced a little bit. But one thing I'm really advocating is is use it. I like to call it legacy project. Use it on a project if your water system needs help, needs upgrading, or something that the next generation or a few years down the road can say, hey, you know, we're enjoying this improvement because of the COVID money. And I think it's real important to kind of stop. You don't have to expend the funds until 2024. So I think it's really important to kind of make a list and see what your priorities are and use it on something that can be useful and enjoyed through the years. And so while the guidelines aren't out yet, so we're here in April, I'm hoping that the guidelines from Treasury will come out in about 2 weeks is what we're hearing from National League of Cities. So that's when we'll find out exactly what the uses of the funds for. It's going to be, I think, pretty liberal the way you can use them. But there's also other funds. There's funds for broadband and funds for water, separate funding for that. And also for partnerships on rental assistance and for helping child care programs and things. So it's really, it's not just going to towns and cities, but there's going to be a whole lot of funding available for programs that localities, municipalities, parishes can partner with. And then on top of that, now we're starting to hear about a transportation infrastructure bill that could be coming down. That's equally important because of Louisiana's got several billion-dollar backlog in roads, and especially the off-system road and bridges, which is what a lot of our small towns rely on, these off-system roads. So we're going to continue to work with our congressional delegation and the National League of Cities on trying to work on getting that transportation and infrastructure bill passed through Congress. And so I'm just excited. This really is, I think, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with these funds. And the important thing is they need to be spent responsibly, because this could be a kind of a change in the ability how we localities, how municipalities get these funds directly as opposed to going through the state. And if it can be done successfully, Congress may take a better view, a different view on how we disperse these funds to municipal governments indirectly. So,
well, I wasn't planning on making a second trip this year, but I'm glad to be back. And it gave us the opportunity to kind of catch up, because now there's, I guess, 2 more months of progress since I was here before. And that's more people vaccinated, cases going down with regard to the pandemic. And I'm excited to learn about Grand Cane.
And I'm glad. Finally. I think in a previous episode, I think I mentioned, you know, hopeful in the spring with the festivals, and so happy to hear that you're coming to
the festival.
Yes, I mean, that's great. So maybe, you know, when our crystal ball that we had when we discussed that a couple of months ago, maybe coming to fruition. So I really appreciate you spending some time.
Yeah,
and I'm sure Mayor Richardson would appreciate any sales tax contribution. So, but it's going to be a great festival. I'm hopeful the weather will be a little better than it is today. So, and we have a good crowd at Grand Cane, because it's really a great little town.
And hopefully the first of many festivals to come this year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. John, thanks again for inviting me out. And now I guess kind of twice, though it wasn't intended to be twice for the same series, but appreciate you. And I very much appreciate again, the Department of Economic Development for being a sponsor and partner on this too. So you got great small towns, and I'm excited to share them.
Thank you. Appreciate everything you do and helping us promote our small towns. And we look forward for season 3.
Okay. All right. We'll start planning that right after this.
That sounds good.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
So, small towners, let's learn more as we go to our 5th and final small town in this 5-episode road trip series in the state of Louisiana. Today, we visit a very small town in northwest Louisiana that has focused a great deal on bringing back local pride in its revitalization efforts. And we talk with a mayor that, on behalf of her village, quite literally took ownership of the downtown to make sure that things were turning in the right direction. We're going to go talk with Mayor Marsha Richardson in the small town of Grand Cane, Louisiana. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got 2 traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia.
Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, well, I didn't make it the first time I tried to come to this small town, but the second time was a charm. Usually it's third time, so I'm glad it didn't take three. But I'm finally in the very small town, the village of Grand Cane, Louisiana, and I have the pleasure of sitting in a really cool building I'm going to ask about early on that is the Village Hall, and I'm sitting with the mayor of Grand Cane, Mayor Marsha Richardson. Mayor Richardson, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, thank you for including us in your broadcast. We're honored, very honored, and I love to talk about the village, and I love to talk about the building. The building was originally the bank, and this bank did not close during the Depression. It was family-owned, and they didn't close.
Oh, wow.
So we had money in the town, evidently. But
somebody did, anyway.
The bank was sold to another bank, and another bank built another bank here in town, and so they gave us this building, and we call it Village Hall now.
Okay.
But we kept all the aspects of a bank, and it's been used in several commercials, you know, because of the authenticity of the banking look.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely be getting some pictures and putting on our social media as we talk about this episode, because they've still got the teller cages in here.
Exactly.
So I guess you make sure that you can't get to the city clerk if you've got an issue with your utility bill.
Well, when I first married, you put money in the first window.
Okay.
And if you wanted to talk about a loan, you went to the second window.
Oh.
But now it was the same gentleman, but he just changed windows.
But he said, I'm sorry, I can't talk about this here. Right. If you'll go down to the next window, I'll be down.
And I had the experience of overdrawing the bank account one time.
Uh-oh.
And he called me and he said, I need you to come down here. And he had the big ledger on the big stand, and he said, you see this? And it was little inks around in red.
Yeah.
And it was $17. And he said, I'm not going to call your husband this time, but if it happens again, I said, it will never happen again.
Just that
so
one
that's
time.
That's my personal banking experience.
Now, didn't you tell me there was an incident involving the woman who is now your
my city clerk's uh-huh. mother was locked in the vault with the banker during a robbery.
Oh, okay.
Sure did. Sure did, but they survived, and they caught the robber, and everything worked out good. But
and brought the money back.
Made the front page of the Mansfield Enterprise.
Oh, goodness.
That's really big news.
Not why you want to be on the front page, but I guess it's excitement enough, right?
Exactly.
Well, this is an incredible building. There's actually a whole row of pretty nice, incredible buildings. And
we're fortunate to have a row of buildings. We really are. And we found out through having to do some fire doors that the walls are 19 inches thick of brick. But fire marshal had us put some entrances in from the buildings, and so that's how we found out they were that thick.
Wow.
So they've been here a while, and they're probably going to be here a while.
Well, let's hope so.
Yep.
Well, we're going to talk a whole lot more about Grand Cane, but I want to, and I know our audience wants to get to know you a little bit, so I'll start this with my same first question that I ask everybody. Were you born in Grand Cane, Louisiana?
No, I wasn't. I was born in Shreveport.
Well, that's just up the road a little
bit. And so that's just 45 minutes away.
Right.
But back then it was a train ride that was an hour and a half. But
transportation's gotten a little faster.
Gotten better now, yeah. But we came to Grand Cane in 1946. My parents bought what they called then the coffee shop, which was a restaurant, bus stop, mm-hmm. magazines for sale, coffee in a cup. And the first time I ever saw anybody pour coffee in a saucer, I thought, oh my goodness, what has happened to me? But anyway, that was cooling it down, I guess. I never did. But that was fun time in my life to come to Grand Cane. We loved Grand Cane, and it's been home ever since.
So. I'm not trying to figure out your age by doing this math, but how old were you when you came to live here? Because if you grew up...
When I came to Grand Cane, I was eight.
Eight, okay. So
you, and for, I'm 83 now.
So you have
so
some
I've been
memories.
Here a long time, yeah.
You have some memories of Shreveport, but pretty much you did your growing up here in Grand Cane.
Yeah, so, well, one thing, we lived in a street on streets in Shreveport that were concrete, and they had sidewalks.
Yeah.
And we came to Grand Cane, and we had dirt and gravel. And my only mode of transportation in Shreveport was a scooter.
Yeah.
Well, that was lost down here. There wasn't any scooter riding anywhere.
Didn't go so well on the gravel?
No scooters.
A little better on that concrete, on the sidewalk and on the road, huh?
My dad said if you were supposed to have wheels, you'd have been born with them. So I didn't have wheels.
So was that a little bit of a culture shock for an eight-year-old?
Sort of kind of was,
yeah.
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 And we had never had chamber pots either.
Okay.
Found out what that was.
A little different the way you did things so in a couple different areas of
life. I have had a very liberal education. In fact, behind the village buildings now, back then was a three-holer.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But it's not there now.
I was going to say, you moved on from that at least.
Right. So I've seen a lot of changes in Grand Cane.
And you took care of that. They took care of that before you were the mayor, I assume.
Oh, yes. Oh, goodness, yes. That's been gone a long time.
Well, talk about what life was like after the culture shock and after you settled. What was life like in the small town here?
Well, it was like becoming a member of a very large family.
Yeah.
You were watched by many eyes and... there was no secrets, secrets whatsoever. So.
You mentioned as we were talking when I was setting up everything that someone, I think it was someone with regard to historical preservation, made mention of all the porches and how all the houses had porches.
Every house had a porch. And now this is back in the 40s, 50s, and there was not a TV and there was not an air conditioner. And people sat on their porches and they watched we would walk around. All we had to do was walk around and see what we could do and entertain ourselves.
And they were sitting on the porches
and they
it was
were sitting
cooler
on the porches
outside,
watching,
fanning themselves.
What are you kids up to now? You know,
and that was how neighborhood watch worked,
right? And they might even have, I made some popcorn balls today. Would y'all like to have? No, we'd love that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
that was
yeah.
the kind of town where Grand Cane was.
Yeah.
So it was a fun place to grow up. And married the boy across the street, though. Session we grew up, we married the boy from across the street. We built a home here and raised our family here. And I owe the village. The village doesn't owe me. I owe the village. And so I enjoy serving it. I don't accept pay for the job. It's what it is. I do it because I want to.
Now, let me ask this, because there's been a lot of consolidation over the years. Did you go to school here in town, or was there a parish high school? That
Grand Cane High School,
okay.
The oldest accredited public high school in the state of Louisiana.
Okay.
And it was closed in 1968, but... It's a private school now. It's still going. It's a private school.
Okay, so there's still a campus there that you can go back to.
Right. But I finished high school in 1956. And
soon after got married, or was there time in between?
Well, I finished on the 25th day of May, and I married on the 24th day of June.
Okay.
So I've been married all my life. And it
almost
was fine
a month
for me.
In between.
Almost. It was fine for me, but my daughters all finished college.
Yeah.
So, I had... Times were different. They needed to have an education. So.
Either you or your husband, any thoughts about going off somewhere else, or was this just home? It was just never a thought?
Well, now, when I married, he was employed by Seal Test Creamery in New Orleans, and we lived in New Orleans.
Oh, okay, so you did move away.
And we did move away, yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Then we moved to Denver, Colorado, where he was a Seal Test worker out there.
You traveled a little bit, went to some much bigger cities. Now, was that right away, as soon as you got married? He
56 to 61.
Okay.
Like
so for about 4 years, you were in
but
a couple
in
different
places.
But
in that period of time, we'd had three girls.
Okay.
And we'd moved around, But he decided he wanted to be a dairy farmer, which he'd grown up on a dairy farm.
Okay.
So we came back here and started all over again, built a house and rented land and built a dairy barn, drilled a water well, built a hay barn, bought cows. We were so deep in debt, I thought, oh, we'll never, ever... But you know what? We got it all paid for. The house was paid for in 79. The dairy was paid for. I mean, we worked at it.
Yeah.
My job was keep everybody fed and well and raise the calves.
Now, since you were in, you said New Orleans, and you were in, you said Colorado,
Denver, Colorado.
Any thoughts about it? Because if you wanted to do that, was there any thoughts about being somewhere else? Or was this just always, it was always home?
This was
you
home.
Always knew you were coming back?
Grand Cane was home.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get home. And so, that was fine with me. I get back here with my mom and daddy were too.
So that was always, you went off somewhere else just knowing you were coming back.
Right. Well, no, we didn't think that. I mean, we didn't leave with the idea we'd be back. I was going to never come back, you know, when you leave and you're 18 years old.
But think you're going to shake the dust off this town?
After a while, we decided, yeah, we would come back.
Well, what is it that changed? I mean, it was 4 years, so it wasn't a terribly long time. But what made you feel like, well, yeah, there's other places, there's bigger cities.
Because of him being unhappy with work. If your husband ain't happy at work, Lord, get back with those cows. I never knew, you know, I used to tell people, to get attention, you have to just get out on all fours and moo. But that passed, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope it didn't come to that too often.
But anyway, we've had a lot of fun, I'll put it that way.
That's what it sounds like.
I made it fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to be.
Well, was there, when you came back, I mean, after 4 years, probably not much had changed, but how have things changed over the years? How things change, and then also how they stayed the same, because that's the beauty about small towns. There's a lot of things that don't change.
In the beginning, there were 3 grocery stores, 2 gas stations, a mercantile, the restaurant, a library, a barbershop, a dentist office. And as people became and got cars and they shopped, the no more grocery store, no more mercantile. The town just kind of dried up during that 50-60 period there.
It's probably a lot because you actually said this earlier. Shreveport is just 45 minutes
right now, but
it was an hour and a half train ride years
ago. That's what happened.
So when it got easier to go to the bigger place.
It was just the change of the times, and so we kind of dried up here.
Yeah.
Back in, I guess, 2004 or 5, we had a gentleman here who started a theater, and we had a back alley theater, which was, you brought your own chair to sit in the grass and look at a podium that he had built.
Yeah.
No roof.
So it's outdoor. He's got a platform.
Three walls. Okay. And they put on a play. Well, it caught on. And eventually it got a roof. The town owned the building.
Okay.
And it got a roof. We put a roof over it. And that's when the fire marshal said we had to go through the brick wall. You know, like,
that's how you found out
that
how thick
all right.
the walls
yeah,
were.
That was it. We got that brick wall down. That was kind of the beginning of realizing we had a little gym here. But nobody seemed to think, no, you shouldn't. But Clayton Davis was elected mayor, and I ran and was elected on the town council.
Now, you've already told me a little bit, so I'm going to pry. Talk about how you decided to get involved. What were some of the things that you saw that made you want to get involved?
A friend of mine was on the town council, and he said, I wish you'd come to a meeting.
Yeah.
And so I did, and I was shocked at what I heard at the meeting. With a lot of negativism, and that's not the way to get anything done. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to run for. And my dad said, now, I've been on that town council before, and you're not going to please anybody. You just need to stay out of that business. And I said, well, no. He said, well, if they want a $10 bill and you give them one, they're going to want 2 5, so you're not ever going to please them. So I said, well, I'm going to try. And so there were enough of us on here that had a vision. You have to have a vision. You have to imagine this can happen. Mm-hmm. It's going to take some work. Not going to happen overnight. So we started out, and we got going, and slowly had to have a representative, Cherry Keat was her name. And we talked to her about advice, and she said, the first thing you do is get you a good lawyer, because a lawyer can help you get things done.
Sure, sure.
So she recommended one, and we got him. We got some resolutions and some ordinances in place, and where absentee owners couldn't warehouse in our buildings. And
well, I was just going to ask you now, because you're jumping into some of the things you did, but what were, I guess, as a candidate, when you decided to run, what were some of the key issues that motivated you? And you've already named some of the buildings and some of
My key issue was the fact that the discussions going on were not people raised in Grand Canyon. We didn't act like that. You just don't
so
do
really,
that in public.
Really just some of the behavior.
Right,
of,
right. Yeah, yeah. Don't argue in public. That gets nowhere. You don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we didn't do that. That's why I got involved. I love this town. I was raised by the teachers here. There were only 68 in the whole school when I went to school. And we went, I have been a speaker in Washington and in Chicago for the FBLA.
Wow.
I represented the state of Louisiana, and I said, I'm a little school, 6 in my graduating class. But we were just as good as anybody, and you get up and, you know, and I did.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me to, you know, as long as I feel like I'm right.
Right.
and working for the better of all, you know.
So. Let me just make sure to get some of the details. I know in this, we're sitting in a village, mm-hmm. and so what's the population of Grand Cane?
Well, the census said 244, but I can't find them. I have tried.
Maybe they'll show up on the next census.
Well, I'm hoping that this new census will show our true thing. I mean, when we have an election, you have 88 votes.
Right.
So that kind of tells me that somebody's not.
Well, some of them are too young to vote.
I guess that's it. That must be it, yeah.
And then some of them, unfortunately, don't care enough to go register. Right. And then some of them that are registered don't care
just
enough
don't
to
care
show
to vote.
Up.
So. I think that's a big right. problem all right. over. Yeah. People just don't vote.
Yep. Yeah. And it's yeah. sometimes it's the people that don't go vote are the first ones to come out to your town council meetings and complain, right? And they didn't have anything
but
to do with it.
You know, I was teachers put a lot of effort into us to make us be better citizens. And so that's where I've tried to be. I owe them a lot, and I have to be their spokesman. One of my old principals is still a Rob, and I've been married, might be 65 years this year, but he still calls me by my maiden name.
So you ran for town council. You wanted to change the culture. There was something specific. You started talking about the absentee, and just to make sure I've got this right, a village council. I keep saying town council, but it's technically
village council.
Has three council members.
Three
council
and
members
a mayor.
And a mayor.
Uh-huh, right.
Okay, so you were one
and
of the
clerk.
Three.
Uh-huh.
And are they all at large as far as how they're elected? Okay, so.
You run at large. Yeah.
So the year you ran that first time,
to say
opposition, they weren't specifically running against you. Are they staggered seats here or they all run
no,
at the
you
same time?
No, you all run at the same time.
So how many people ran for those three seats the year you went?
Five ran for the three
okay,
seats.
So you had to get out and campaign.
So I went. I either wrote a note if it was someone that worked and I couldn't catch them at home,
yeah.
or I visited every home in the village,
mm-hmm.
discussions with everybody. I went to the person that I was running basically against, mm-hmm. and I said, I just want you to know, you're not going to win. You're not. There's just people are tired of the arguing that goes on, and I'm so sorry because you're just one of the best people I've ever known in my life, but I'm trying to tell you what you're in for. Well, it happened, and he got mad at me, but he got over it.
So all three people that were, I guess, the incumbents, they ran, and then you and one other person who had never been elected
Only one person came back on the council.
Okay, so the two newcomers came and unseated two of the, mm-hmm. the incumbents. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what happened.
So the village wanted change.
Yeah.
And they
got a change.
It sounds like they got it.
They got it.
So you came in, going back to what you were saying about hiring an attorney.
The attorney and got started to do things correctly.
Yeah.
I've always, I mean, it's hard to change sometimes. But if you do it in the right way and it's for the betterment of everyone, it works out.
Yeah.
And so we had to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And no, I don't go at anything trying to make an enemy, but we have to, change is coming. You have to do it. You have to change.
And you're probably going to ruffle some feathers along the way.
Oh, well,
step on some toes.
Like I say, you grow a long neck and you just don't worry about it. And if I go a little deaf, I don't hear that and just go on about my merry way.
Yep.
And but it can be accomplished. Now, what we've done in Grand Cane started in 2007.
And that's what you came on the council?
We finished the last building last month,
okay.
in March. And it wasn't always that easy. But we knew we could do it.
Right.
I knew it could happen. I just knew it could.
Well, it's just like, and we were talking about this before I hit record on the mics here. It's if you think it's going to be a quick turnaround and get quick results, then you shouldn't even bother because
it's not. It's not worth the effort.
It's got to be a persistent
We receive, it used to be $25,000 from the state in refund back from tax money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dropped down to 14 now. But back then, and we designated what it would go for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always going to the sewer. And so I said, if we can't fix but one manhole, let's do it right.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do that one again next year.
Right. Band-aid on a broken arm,
right,
you're going to end up with a continuing problem. Yeah.
So I found a gentleman that was really good. And he fixed three of them. He said, you've got money left. I said, oh, hallelujah. So, I mean, we had to find people that cared to do things right,
mm-hmm.
and help us because we had a limited amount of money.
Yeah.
We have done every bit of this work, and we did not go in debt because as we fixed the building, we got revenue from it by being a business with sales tax and rent.
And to clarify for everybody, because we were talking about this, You actually, in kind of trying to take care of this absentee ownership, you know, you said it'd be generations away and the people who own the building are letting it fall into disrepair.
And don't care.
You actually set out to own it as the village, not just get them to fix it up and keep owning it.
And we wanted to control
who
was in it.
And so
because somebody living away from here didn't care if it was rented or not. Their taxes are like $14 a year.
Right, not much. So the incentive is not that great for it.
Right, we have some property here in town that people live in Houston and all. They don't care. They spend their $27 in, and it's all grown up. We have to clip it and cut it and all. You know, it's just because we want the town to look right.
So are these mostly commercial? You also have some residential?
It's residential.
Okay.
Residential, yeah.
So
the commercial buildings, we've gotten a hold of those now. We've got that. We control that. We're a historical district from one street to the next. That's it.
Uh-huh.
And we take care of that. One time we tried zoning, and that word just brought out all kinds of, I've never seen so many green eyes in all my life as I did when he said zoning. But all we were trying to do is protect the business district from coming into the residential area.
Right.
Because there's nothing to prevent anybody from buying a lot and putting something in.
Right.
And,
if it's zoned appropriately, but if you control that.
It was not perceived as that.
Sure.
So.
Well, people, I've already run into this myself, and people say, wait, that's you trying to tell me what
I can and can't do
land. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you just said, okay, well, we'll just own the land.
we'll just back off and we'll take care of what we take care of.
Okay.
And,
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but roughly how many homes, residences, does a village own?
In Grand Cane?
Yeah.
We have about 36 houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
36, yeah.
That's
and they're
that's
mostly
a big number
restored
for the number of
nice
residences.
Houses.
Okay.
I mean, you know, yeah, we don't have any slum area.
But you've encouraged the folks that weren't taking care of their home, the residences.
Property standards without having property standards.
Right.
I look back on when I was growing up, there was nothing for anybody to keep a yard with but a sickle.
Yeah.
And a sling,
and they managed.
And a push mower, and there was not a yard in this town that was not neat.
Yeah.
Pride. People had pride.
Yep.
They might not have anything else, but they had pride,
mm-hmm.
and they took care of what they had.
And now, for the final time on this road trip, we talk with our friend Karen White, Executive Counsel of the LMA, and discuss her desire for what people will take away from our stories of Louisiana small towns.
So, Karen, as we finish up, this is the last of the five episodes in this series. I asked you this question when I came through Louisiana before my first road trip. What you hope people listening get out of these episodes about maybe the specific towns that we're profiling, but also small towns, cities, towns, and villages in Louisiana overall. So, I'll ask the same question again because obviously, you know, if it was just a random 2 years, there wouldn't be much difference. But these past years, 2 years, and specifically the last 1 year, have created quite a bit of change. So what do you hope people get out of the stories from these five small towns?
It's a great point. You probably could copy and paste my answer from 2019, had we not had a global pandemic and multiple natural disasters in between. I think what I would love for the listeners to get, not just from our conversations, but obviously you visiting with our five remarkable small towns, is that they have displayed in different ways resiliency in the face of adversity. And so what may have historically been seen as a weakness, right? You're small, you don't have a huge revenue base, right? You have a small population. Historically, that may have been seen as a detriment. But in this new post-corona, mid-corona world of ours, it makes you more agile. And because you are smaller, you're able to implement more innovative, you know, adaptations that maybe big cities aren't able to do. They can't turn on a dime. But I promise you, a small village that's got five employees can pretty quickly adapt and implement whatever is necessary, again, in order to seize the opportunity to try to turn tragedy into triumph by having a silver lining to everything that went on in 2020 and is still going on today. So that would be it, is for our listeners to know that small towns matter. They matter now more than ever. You know, I think social distancing, right, has become the moniker for us staying 6 feet away from each other. Unfortunately, it also has led to a great deal of depression and people dissociating completely and feeling alone. And I think small towns tend to do a better job of making people feel embraced and included, even if we have to stay across the room from one another or connect online, there's a feeling in small towns that you just don't get in bigger metropolitan areas. So they matter, and the resilience that they've shown, I think, is something that everybody can learn from, whether you have a population of 500,000 or, as the village of Mound has, 19, or anything in between. They have valuable lessons to impart to everybody.
Well, Karen, thanks to the Louisiana Municipal Association for partnering with me again, and I've enjoyed my trip, though the weather was colder and icier than I ever would have expected.
Look, we are always thrilled to have you, and I promise the next time we're going to try to dial up weather that is perfect and free of any kind of natural disaster or drama.
I just need to come later in the year, but just before hurricane season. We'll need to schedule it better.
I would certainly suggest that we have a beautiful window around October where the weather is perfect.
Okay.
Just that month.
All
so
right.
Come in October.
All right. Sounds good. We'll do it that way next time.
Thanks,
all
my
right.
friend.
Thanks, Karen. Bye-bye.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
Let me go back now, actually, because we started with you running for village council.
Village council. Did that 4 years.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So you just did that, the four-year term.
4 years, uh-huh. And when that term was up, the mayor decided not to run.
Yeah.
And so we kind of all got together and knew one of us would have to stay in to keep things going.
Right.
So I decided I would do it. And so I ran for mayor, and I had one person run against me.
But not someone else from the council.
No, not someone else
from the council. It sounds like you had the two other council members endorsing you,
right,
essentially,
the first,
for that.
First year, I had an opponent, yep. And I haven't had one since.
Okay.
And so, but I enjoy what I do. I enjoy it. It's fun.
I don't want you to say a name or anything. It just makes me curious. You talked mm-hmm. about all the things and kind of ruffling feathers, stepping on mm-hmm. toes a little mm-hmm. bit. And you mm-hmm. started in that immediately, it sounds like, being on council. Mm-hmm. That group started to get some things done,
right.
Started to change
we
up some
active,
things.
Well, the first thing we did was go together in a van to mm-hmm. Baton Rouge for mm-hmm. a meeting, which I think probably was not supposed to be ethically done, but we did it, not knowing it, you know. But the thing that we agreed to
But you're
do,
saying it's an honest mistake, right?
It was an honest
just
mistake.
Just in case the
yeah, right.
Attorney General
but what
of Louisiana
we decided, no matter what was going on, we would never argue in public. We might disagree, but never yeah. have a vocal discussion that went sour.
Goes back to what you were saying about wanting to change the culture.
That's why I wanted to change the yeah. outlook, what yeah. the perception of what the Grand Canyon was.
We
are people that work together to accomplish things.
Yeah.
And we have. And one of the first things, I forgot to tell you a while ago, one of the first things we did was put up streetlights.
Okay.
If you drove through Grand Canyon at night, it had lights on. We lit the town.
Okay.
Put a sign on the end of the building.
You want to make sure
there.
People saw it even at night.
You saw it. Right. It might not be anything going on. And we also had...
But you could see if there was nothing going on.
Started the festival business, put up brown paper over the empty building, went and let children draw art on them. Something.
That's a good idea.
Because yeah. the buildings were empty and nothing
right.
in them.
So
you
made a use for it, yeah.
Make use for it and get something going on. And
yeah.
It takes a while. Now we have real businesses and real buildings and real pictures on the walls and...
You got some things started, but you've already alluded to the fact it just mm-hmm. takes
just
some
takes time.
So obviously, when the mayor decided not to run for re-election, someone had to do it. I'm curious, in those conversations you say where you council members, fellow council members got together, did you try to get one of the other ones to do it?
Well, I thought that they probably would do a better job. I could be a good helper.
Yeah.
But that didn't work. And I lost my vote, and I hated that. I like voting. That was what I mean.
When yeah.
When you get to be the
mayor. You said that earlier.
You can't
make a motion.
What they vote to do.
There you
and
go.
They like to do things.
Okay.
We make sure of that.
Well, you still.
We have a lot of work sessions.
You were hopeful that you would still be getting along with at least two of the council members.
Oh, yes.
Do those same two stay on when you.
We all work together, yeah.
So my question earlier was going to be, since there was so much change and a little bit of ruffle feathers, without telling me too much detail, because I don't want anyone to get talked negatively, the person who decided to run against you, were they wanting to keep things from happening, or was there a specific initiative that person wanted to do that just kind of went opposite direction of what you guys were already starting to do?
A good friend, but someone else paid their fee and said no one should go in unopposed.
Okay, so just on principle. I can respect that.
Mm-hmm.
just to so make
that's
sure.
That's what happened.
Keeps you honest. But then 4 years later, nobody thought that same principle applied. So just the first time, you're not supposed to interpose. After that,
right.
You can be the incumbent.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it is.
Well,
you have to prove yourself here. That's the thing. You have to prove yourself.
Well, that's a small town thing,
too. I'm not hurting this town. I wouldn't do anything to hurt this town. We planted flowers down here, make it look good, you know, just stuff like that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because you got the ball rolling in your first 4 years on council. So what did you continue to do? What are some other things? Because you got in for a purpose, but I'm willing to bet that you discovered some other issues that you may not have been quite as aware of as a private citizen.
Well, like I say, we didn't realize the ownership of the buildings, how important that was, and getting them out and get the ordinances in that you could not store and make a warehouse out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be a viable business. You can own the business and all.
Mm-hmm.
But it had to be a business. It's not a warehouse. This is not a section of warehouses.
Right.
They're historical buildings. And you had to get ordinances to do that. That's why it took so long.
Yeah.
And they had to be in place.
You had to do it right.
And some owners cooperated and understood. And we had two businesses that down on the other end that were privately owned. The buildings were. And they put in businesses. They saw that Grand Cane needed to. And they were profitable. Both of them were.
Mm-hmm.
And but the middle of the section of buildings was owned by an absentee owner.
Mm-hmm.
And it strictly was a warehouse for him. It came to that we finally got to where we could had the money and we could buy him out. We had made him an offer. And he decided he'd take it since we were going to be going to court. And I informed him of the fact that we could buy him out and it'd be all safe and done, or we'll see you in court on Tuesday. And you understand, we all live in DeSoto Parish and elect the judges. You live in Caddo Parish and don't. So you're not going to win and you're going to pay all the costs, but that's okay. We'll be okay. So he decided that he would take the money and go.
that motivated him a little bit.
Motivated him. But truth hurts.
At the last
truth
minute. Yeah.
But I was honest with him. That's exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't think we hadn't already talked to the judges. They knew what we were struggling to do. And immediately we had to spend money then to fix the buildings.
Yeah.
Because they were in deplorable shape. Now, mm-hmm. they really were. But they're not now.
Now, is that something you had to go and find some grants? Or was there some state or federal money? Or was it just all you just had to do it yourself?
Because
you've already said you've been able to stay out of debt.
All of our sales tax was going into street fund.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's just so many streets you can fix. You know, we just got all this money in the street fund. So we were able to redelegate some of the street money into building, and that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we used our own money, didn't have any grants.
Okay.
Paid as we go.
So you didn't have to borrow. You just moved a little slower pace.
The only way to borrow money is if you're going to make money. Don't borrow money to spend money. Borrow money is going to make you money.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't borrow any money, and we fixed them as we go. And as we rented them, now they're all... they're all fixed, they're all paid for, and we're getting the revenue from them.
Yeah.
And, now, that doesn't mean we don't have some more projects. We got some more projects.
Sure.
We got to fix the back of them now, make them look good. So
now, I'm curious, if you've acquired buildings and then, of course, spent money to fix them up, and now you've got revenue, it sounds like what you're saying, that investment has actually made you better off financially,
really?
As a town. And obviously, there's more going on, but I know there's some places where they don't mind, you know, taking some shorter-term risk on...
Well, you're living in a time now where a lot of people like to get out and rediscover what used to be.
Yeah. All these small towns and the downtown areas.
Grand Canyon used to be coming alive again.
And it used to take an hour and a half train ride from Shreveport. Now they can just drive 45 minutes. So what was working against you, and you talked about the 50s and 60s, people wanted to go to Shreveport. Now it's coming back the other way in some small towns that are making the efforts or benefiting.
My thing I've always thought, well, you know, really our membership's fixing to be closed. You probably ought to get in on it.
All right, everybody.
It's a kind of a private affair down here.
Grand Canyon is going quick.
Yeah. You've got the back alley that brings in talent and entertainment.
Yeah.
And it's all local. It's a very talented area, very talented.
Well, talk about that, because I was just going to ask, because since I wasn't able to get here earlier this year, that's right, because of ice and snow and just couldn't, the roads were closed, couldn't even physically get in the town. I know you guys had some utilities
we've been shut down since last March, but we are chomping at the bit to get going again. Now, we've had a few musicals in the park with local talent, with distant seating and distant. The performers were even far apart.
Yeah.
But we try to keep some activity going in Grand Canyon.
Well, there's something, because I'm here today so that I can be tomorrow for the Village Festival. So talk about
Festival tomorrow. Yeah. We had a big Christmas parade, and we realized then that people needed our Christmas parades used to be horses and wagons and buggies, and that's kind of has gone by the wayside because the people that did that are no longer doing it. And so we went to a motorized parade with you have your lawnmower, your go-kart, your mule, or your golf cart, and they were all decorated. And we had a big turnout for that parade.
Yeah.
So we decided the festival, it was time to start having our market days, we call them.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because it's not an annual festival.
It's
something
you do market days.
It's several times.
That, right, do it several times. You get your jellies and your jams and your signs and your little T-shirt decorations. And
so that's happening tomorrow. Tell me what I can expect to get to experience tomorrow, because I'm going to be there.
Well, a little bit of everything. We have some wood carvings and some wood furniture, all homemade, you know, locally made. There'll be lots of jellies and jams and preserves and stuff. And so it's just a fun day, and people get to visit and get out and see one. That's the big thing, is visiting, getting out and seeing one.
So lots of vendors.
All right.
Good food.
I have been told 82 to be invited.
Oh, wow.
Okay. 82 vendors. And that's going to be it'll take all afternoon to walk around to visit with them.
That's more vendors than you got houses in Grand Canyon.
I'm telling you. That's what I'm saying. We're going to have right.
So the population of Grand Canyon is probably going to quintuple in one day.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're
just going to double.
How often do you do that event? Because you said you do it several times.
It was like this twice a year. Okay. They have one in the spring and the fall.
But then you have some smaller ones.
Then we have smaller ones along. Yeah. We'll have an iced tea afternoon, or we'll have an ice cream social afternoon. Or last week we had a wine down tasting.
Yeah.
And that was ended up.
You're saying wine down.
Wine down.
Yeah. You're not talking about wine down. Well, you drink a little wine.
It was a wine down.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my kind of down.
Well, we have a local winery
up
in Kickapoo, which is north of Grand Canyon.
How far?
7, 8 miles.
Oh, okay, right here. Okay.
And complimentary tasting at the business, and then if you wanted to purchase anything, you could buy it from him.
Okay.
But it was complimentary tasting to get the various kinds he had. Just another way to have a social event going on in Grand Canyon.
Now, does that, because it sounds like things, you weren't having as many activities like that. There weren't as many.
Right, we're kind of breaking loose a little bit. Man, we've been shut down so long.
Well, I just mean, even before, I mean, you didn't have. You painted a picture earlier about how there weren't businesses. There, you know, go back several decades, there were, and then there was a kind of a valley where many businesses in town, and now you're back.
We're coming back.
And part of it's because of the efforts that you and your group made when you came on council and now mayor.
We have younger blood in town with better ideas. Some of us are dried up, and they've got good ideas, and that's how we progress.
Well, don't sell yourself short. It sounds like you're the one that laid the foundation for all this.
Well, the merchants are making a real comeback.
Good.
They're an active group, and we do things to help them stay merchants.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And try to do so.
Are you, because we were talking a little bit, and I'm trying to remember the details before we recorded, about you got several things that you named that are in town, but you're kind of looking to maybe have some more things come in.
So
you guys, sounds like you're actively recruiting at least a little bit now.
Right.
There's only so much. Now, you're not going to make this a big city or anything.
No, because you
got plenty going on now. But what was it? You said that you were looking for another restaurant? You
we're
got
looking
the one
for
in town
a location
now?
For a restaurant.
Okay,
looking for that. And so we're working on it. It takes time.
Oh, yeah.
It takes time.
Well, it's just, but you're building on.
Right.
And it's easier once you've got some momentum because exactly. there's already some excitement mm-hmm. here.
Right.
If you
right.
can have a festival and 82 mm-hmm. people want to come set up to sell because they know that people
they
are coming to Grand Canyon, then that's a good thing.
Well, we have a unique situation with having the main street that used to be the main highway.
Yeah.
And so we have a place for them together.
Yeah.
There is in October, they do a 50-mile Trash Your Treasure mm-hmm. starting up at Stonewall and goes all the way to Joaquin, Texas. Mm-hmm. The biggest setup will be here because we have the ideal place
wow.
for it. We have access to the highway and everything's seen on the highway, but we're not on the highway. And
right.
so we look forward to that in October. So we get a free exposure through that.
Yeah. All right. Now tell me, what's the event called again, and where does it go to and from?
Well, it starts in Stonewall, and it's called the Trail of Treasure. And it's 50 miles long, goes from Stonewall all the way through Grand Canyon, Mansfield, Logansport, on to Joaquin, Texas. Follows 171 and Highway 84. And it's a big second weekend in October every year. I think it's second weekend in October. Second or third, anyway. But we look forward to it because we have a big crowd, and that advertises Grand Canyon, too.
Well, what else do you have? There's so much else. That might be it, but I have a feeling you're going to say
no,
there's more.
We have a historical home here in Grand Canyon that was given to the village and restored. It's called the Cook Hill House.
I should have brought that one up. That's where I'm staying tonight.
Right. That's
so
where
I
you'll
can
find
stay
out.
And go to the
we have a lady who takes care of the inn and provides, keeps everything nice and fresh for us. And we can rent it and have parties up there. Mm-hmm. It's a fun place. I had a lady's hat party up there, and you couldn't come in unless you put on a hat. And one lady said, I'm not messing up my hair. And I said, well, you're not coming in.
Rules are rules.
So I said, I've got rules here today,
That's
and
right.
I've got hats here. You can put one on or you can go home.
You're
it doesn't
firm,
matter.
You're firm but fair.
So we had a good time. It was just a fun get-together and have a hat party.
I can tell. There's somebody listening to this that desperately wants to know, did this woman put on the hat or did
yes,
she go
home?
Yes, she
did. Okay. And, and she looked like somebody out of a BAMP. She looked beautiful in her hat.
Well, good.
That's right.
Glad she did that. I was worried that she just
came
went
in.
Home.
Yeah, okay. She knew she wanted to join us.
She was willing to mess up her hair for it.
And she was a cook, too.
Oh, good.
She needed to be in that
she
house.
She had to be. That's very appropriate.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Mary, you've I'm not calling you old or anything, but you've been in Grand Canyon for a long time. I'm not born and raised here, but been here since you were eight with that four-year break where you moved off to big cities and tried new things. And I can tell just by talking to you, you just love this place. And while you saw an opportunity to make some improvements at one point, and I can tell you're proud of the way things are now after some of those efforts. But just talk about either how things have stayed the same, how things have changed, what it's been like for you to live in Grand Canyon.
Well, there's nothing but pluses in my mind about Grand Canyon. We've had our ups and downs and all, but I've always felt we could do it. I just know we can do it. And I said, I would tell people, if you ever drink our water, you'll be back. And it's kind of worked that way, too. So it's a great place to raise a family. You are not raising your children alone by any means.
It's that front porch committee all up and down the street. That's
watching.
Who does
yeah,
it.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's good. Sometimes you don't appreciate what you have until you miss it. And that's what happened that 4 years Bob and I were away.
Yeah.
We appreciated what we had left home. We needed to get back home.
Yeah.
And so it's been a great journey, and I'm not through. Oh, I got plenty more plans to go for Grand Canyon.
Now, when you are in your,
third
I think you
term.
Said third term, so one term as a council member, and you're in the third term as mayor.
Third term as mayor,
and
yeah.
And when are you up for re-election? When does your seat come up?
In 23.
Okay.
Actually, October 22. And I'm trying to find somebody that will do it. I'd love to be a helper again.
You trying to recruit?
I'm recruiting,
get one of your council members to say we'll just
try
switch.
And working on that.
Recruit
that.
That's how it worked for you. You did one term, so you got to find.
The mayor is a cheerleader.
Right.
That's all they. You promote the town. You promote the town and keep it, and make the people understand. We got to get this done now. Come on, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. A cheerleader and a motivator.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Don't
that's
quit
right.
now. Ooh, we got it going.
Well, Mayor, as we kind of wrap things up, I want to give you the same opportunity I give to all my guests. I'm going to let you speak directly to our small town podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit,
whether it's tomorrow
for the festival, although by the time they're hearing this, that festival's gone, they'll have to wait for the next one, or maybe they should just come move to Grand Canyon, Louisiana.
Well, if we can find some land available, we would love for them to, but it's hard to find anybody let go of the land.
You're
you know,
in
we
demand.
Have the Haynesville Shale go through, and all your dirt's valuable now, so it's really important to keep that dirt.
Yeah,
But we are a fun place to be. And you can be as much in or as much out. It's totally up to an individual. I'm not going to beg anybody to get involved, but I sure would like for you to. It's a lot of fun. We've been blessed in this area. We really have to have people that care. We're located right on the main road. And we put up the lights and the signs to slow you down. We got a 55-mile speed limit here. And I called the sheriff's department one year, and I said, you know, they're just driving a little fast. They don't see our quilts. We are out flying there. So they came up with two motorcycles, and they made a lot. I said, oh, please don't make us a speed trap now. We don't want to be known for that. Good gracious. So we have a happy medium in there. If you just drive 55, you won't be in trouble.
The follow speed limit.
Right. But Grand Cane's a great place, and it's a small town, but lots of love here, lots of love. And wish it for everybody.
So, well, Mayor Marsha,
thank you for coming, though.
Thank you so much for being a part of Small Town Podcast.
Good.
I can't wait for you to hear Mayor Marsha's nickname as we ask her our Get to Know You questions.
All right, now we're going to get to know Mayor Marsha Richardson. I got four questions to help me and our audience get to know you a little better. I think they're fun questions.
Okay.
We're going to learn a little bit about you. First question, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
Peanut.
Peanut. Where did you get the name Peanut?
This is cheerleader for the basketball team. And I don't know if you're old enough to know about three-day tournaments or one-day tournament.
Yeah.
When you go to, well, we were in Pelican, which was hours away on a school bus.
Okay.
Back then. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was the cheerleader, and I got nicknamed Peanut at that tournament, and it stuck all through my high school years.
But how'd you get named Peanut?
Well, because I was the shortest cheerleader.
Oh, okay.
And,
okay.
And I had the biggest mouth.
Shortest cheerleader with the biggest mouth mm-hmm. is called mm-hmm. Peanut.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Peanut. All right. Next question. Does anyone call you that in town here?
No. No one knows that here now. They're all gone that were doing that. They all moved away. All the people I went to school with don't live here anymore, and so they don't know.
But I did tell you I was recording this, right?
You're right.
Okay. Just want to make sure you're aware. All right. Second question. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Mm.
This is going to be good. I can tell.
Do what now?
This is going to be good now.
Yeah.
I got two my goodnesses.
Okay. I'm trying to think what it would be. Oh, my God. I don't know. Right off the bat, I don't sing. I'm not a singer.
I've actually been prepared for this for a while. I've got another question later that will help us get back to this one. So we're going to pass on this for now. Mm-hmm. You're not the first person to have a hard time.
Okay.
This is usually the hardest question, the mm-hmm. karaoke mm-hmm. one. The next one's easier. So third question, what is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Chicken and dumplings.
Okay. See, that was easier than the karaoke mm-hmm. one, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. All right. This will help you with the karaoke. Final question, then we'll go back to the karaoke song. If you could attend any concert of any singer, duo, band, any kind of performer, any performer or any kind, but either they're either now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
Oh, my goodness.
Uh-oh.
I like them all. That's a problem.
Well, now we got to pick somebody. Mm-hmm. Whose concert?
Engelbert.
What now?
What's his name?
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yeah. And what's his name?
Oh, that's man. It, yeah.
I loved it. He could sing so good. It swoons.
So this is perfect.
He was a swooner.
So which of his songs would you do karaoke? Now we'll go back to karaoke songs.
I can't name any of his songs, but I love to hear him sing. Isn't that awful?
But you pick one of his songs for karaoke, or would you pick someone else?
No, I well,
come on, we got to come up with a karaoke song.
Well, you know what comes to mind? This is ridiculous.
No, this would be great.
This
the more ridiculous, the better.
Okay, more ridiculous. Okay, yeah. We had to have a spirit song. And do you remember this the Ballard Oven Biscuits? Do you remember that song?
I don't. I have to look this up.
That was a biscuit thing. We made it Grand Cane's Ever Loving Mohawk.
Can you sing a little bit for the audience?
That's all I remember. Grand Cane's Ever Loving Mohawk. Well, we were the Mohawks, and that was it.
So that's what you do karaoke?
That's not much of a song, but it went to the tune of the Oven Biscuits.
The Oven Biscuits song, but with your words changed. Okay, we'll make sure that's in the mm-hmm. in the karaoke machine when it pops up the words so you can sing that. I'm going to have to look this up.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
All right. Well, Mayor, thanks.
No memory at all of all the fun stuff.
Oh, no. We're gonna relive this. What, next time we go to a karaoke bar, you and I, we're going to do
oh,
it.
Oh, we're going to go sing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't miss that.
I don't know where one is around here,
you? We'll find one. Thanks for letting us get to know you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast and this 5-episode road trip series on small towns in the state of Louisiana. I want to thank Mayor Marsha Richardson for talking with me. Thanks again to the Louisiana Municipal Association for inviting us back, twice, and for partnering with us. And thanks also to Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series on Louisiana Small Towns. As always, I appreciate our season sponsors for Season 4 of the podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. We're headed back to Georgia to explore some more small towns there. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.